Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming this morning. You know, I usually enjoy these opportunities to get together and talk with you and hear directly from you about your ideas and your concerns. I will admit, however, that this particular employee forum might be a bit more difficult than usual, given the disappointing financial news from the third quarter, our shared disappointment and frustration, and of course the additional steps that will be necessary to return to profitability. Difficult as it may be, this is a very good method. It's only one of our methods, but a very good one for keeping two-way communications open and ongoing. And I'm committed to carrying out my responsibility in that area. That's why I'm here. I'm expecting that those of you in the audience will feel the same responsibility today, and that everyone in digital will recognize the urgency of engaging in constructive problem solving and two-way communication as we move forward through Q4 and beyond. One of the important pieces of feedback we received after the last employee forum was that there was a need for more field-related material and sales-related questions and answers. We listened to that concern, and that's why we're holding this employee forum in the U.S. Sales and Marketing Headquarters in Merrimack, New Hampshire. As we get going here, I want to cover one major organizational change first, and then I will discuss the third quarter results in some detail, including the good news. I'll also outline some general changes that are planned as part of our continued turnaround strategy. And in the process of all of these topics, I'll touch on many issues I'm sure that affect us as employees of digital. Following that, I'll take your questions. With respect to the organizational change, you all know that I've asked Enrico Pessitori to assume the responsibilities of our systems business unit, including the worldwide sales and marketing organization. This is in addition to his duties as vice president and general manager of the personal computer business unit. He has succeeded Ed Lucente, who resigned from digital to become executive in residence at Carnegie Mellon University's Graduate School of Industrial Administration. Enrico has worked very successfully to make digital an emerging market leader in the worldwide PC sector of this industry. In just over a year, he has put in place an effective business model and has made extraordinary progress in developing a successful operation across all of its areas. Direct sales, marketing, channels, engineering, and manufacturing. His leadership capabilities, his understanding of marketplace realities, his international experience, and his strategic channels vision add up to a level of general management skill that makes him highly qualified for this new responsibility. Enrico has made an excellent start. He is meeting with each of the business unit managers, the SBU product segment managers, area and territory managers, to better understand ways to reduce our costs, to grow our business, and to remove barriers to our performance. The senior management team and I look forward to working with him as he takes on these expanded responsibilities, and I urge all of you to support him as he helps us move forward. We've all had some time now to digest the news of the third quarter results. Financially, as we know, the news was not good. Digital reported a net loss of $183 million on a revenue decline of 6%, which broke our hard-earned five-quarter string of improvement of year-over-year quarterly results. I've said this to the press, to the analysts, to all of you already, that these results are unacceptable to me. And many of you have told me that they're unacceptable to you as well. Because of the real progress we've made together on so many fronts, the results come as an equally real sort of slap in the face. If I were sitting in the audience with you today, I would be wondering, perhaps, what exactly is the real progress that he's talking about? Here's some evidence. After two quarters of double-digit declines, product revenues are essentially flat worldwide, and order rates are up 8%. We saw 5% growth in U.S. product revenue from the historically higher revenue second quarter to the traditionally lower revenue third quarter this fiscal year. And growth in U.S. order rates are in the double digits for the first time since FY88. The PC business continues to boom, with a doubling in revenues year over year and more than a doubling in units sold. Storage and some of our components businesses are growing in the double digits. And in areas where the results are not as strong, such as the systems business unit, customer acceptance of our new products has been exceptional. Alpha AXP is a clear case in point. The demand for Alpha AXP workstations is growing, and it continues to exceed our expectations. In fact, we nearly doubled Alpha workstation revenues in Q3 over the second quarter. Alpha now represents 27% of our system sales, almost 50% if you exclude PCs. And our total revenue from all Alpha business grew 66% over the second quarter. If we had not been supply constrained, we probably would have doubled our overall Alpha business. We have more than 5,000 applications on Alpha AXP shipping today, about 2,300 on OpenVMS and 2,300 on OSF1 Unix, and about 400 on Windows NT. This gives us the critical mass of applications, the right applications that we believe we need to compete successfully. For example, in electronic design automation, we have the top three Unix applications ported to Alpha AXP. Cadence's Allegro, Mentor's BoardStation, and ViewLogic's PowerView. In mechanical design drafting, we have the top PC CAD application for Windows NT, Autodesk's AutoCAD, version 13. We also have the largest database package ported to OSF1 and OpenVMS, Oracle 7, and the number one mechanical engineering analysis package for both operating systems as well, SDRC's IDEAS. The April 12th announcement of Alpha AXP-based Digital 2100 server is yet another indication of our exceptionally strong competitive positioning for the future. The 2100 server has been extremely well received by customers and by analysts. And with it, we offer best-in-class price performance, best-in-class warranty, best-in-class scalability for symmetric multiprocessing. Here are just a few abbreviated but representative quotes praising what we have to offer with this new system. Our audiences immediately recognize the 2100 server for what it is, an instant industry leader, providing commercial users with large systems features and small system advantages, and technical users with supercomputing performance at workstation prices. In short, we have the evidence that all of these accomplishments with Alpha are real and significant. That revenue and unit growth, the positive response we see in industry surveys that measure customer interest and demand, and important wins in head-to-head competition. There are other key areas that we can point to real progress as well, and a strong position and an investment in future successes. We've announced four wins in competitions for trials with telecommunications providers around the world for video server platforms. In fact, we've won more trials than any other vendor worldwide in competition. And we've been told that we've won several others that are not yet announced. This is an area of high growth potential, and we're poised for a leadership position. And we have finally established credibility in the Unix marketplace after years of struggle and confusion. I was fortunate to deliver the CEO address in March at Uniform 94 in San Francisco, and I was overwhelmed by the positive response to our messages calling for strong industry standards in support of true open computing, and to the increased visibility and marketplace acceptance of Digital's OSF1 Unix, which has a higher compliance rate with Spec 1170 than any other vendor's Unix. After years of floundering, we have fixed our Unix capability problems and have made excellent progress on our Unix and open systems reputation as well. Both steps are absolutely critical to our flexibility as a truly customer-focused business. And Digital has been recognized by the readers of InfoWorld magazine as offering the best client-server technical support in the industry, which means that we are rated the best service company for designing, installing, and maintaining client-server networks for global organizations. By these and by many more measurements, we are succeeding in transforming Digital into the leading provider of open client-server computing that we set out to be. Through our technologies, our products, and our services that are unparalleled in the industry. So the big question is, in light of all of these positive things, what went wrong in Q3? Or more specifically, how do we explain the third quarter financial results? Why did they come as a surprise? And what steps are we taking to reduce the chances of being taken by surprise in the future? First, let me talk about the financial results themselves. With our product mix continuing to shift to low-end products, with aggressive pricing actions on some of our products in the quarter, we experienced a gross margin decline of nearly 10 points year over year. For some specific products, demand actually exceeded forecasts by such an amount that we did not have sufficient ability to ship, and we missed revenue opportunities. We also experienced unacceptable levels of discounting and allowancing in some product areas. This represents a lack of discipline in pricing during the quarter. In addition, our services revenue overall declined nearly 11% compared with the third quarter last year. Declines were felt in both multi-vendor customer services and digital consulting. Now, 8 points of that decline were currency related. 3 points represented an actual decline in the business. On the positive side, multi-vendor customer services is making great strides in growing the non-traditional multi-vendor offering side of the business, with multi-million dollar wins throughout the world, like Telefonica in Spain, Mercury in the United Kingdom, Intel and Applied Materials in the U.S., National Semiconductor and British Telecom in Asia, to just name a few of these. But our increasing product reliability, which is certainly good news for our customers, and the erosion of our traditional systems installed base, plus really fierce competition from third-party providers, has put pressure on both service revenues and profit margins. And in both digital consulting and MCS, new business did not close at the rate that had been predicted, which was a major contributor to the shortfall in the services area. Two other things briefly regarding the revenue. One, in geographic terms, European revenue continued to decline compared with last year, but at a slower rate than we experienced in the first half of this fiscal year. And two, we did experience some revenue declines due to adverse effects of foreign currency fluctuations, but less so than in the first half of the fiscal year. So why did the third quarter earnings results come as such a surprise to us? The situation resulted from a number of specific problems, many of which were not individual systems problems, but related to how systems worked, or really more appropriately, did not work together. This caused us to be significantly off the mark. Let's take an example, our Q3 workstation business. We initially had a product forecast of about 15,000 units. In January, the forecast of what the field thought they could sell increased to about 19,000 units. And by the time the quarter closed, we had orders for 21,000 units. Now, on the one hand, this is a nice problem to have. On the other hand, we could not ship that many. Why? Well, partly because the increases in forecasts came at a faster rate than we could secure the necessary materials. And partly because the mix of orders was not what we expected. We had the wrong types of graphic boards for some of the workstation orders we received. This is, by the way, a compounding problem. As soon as the field understands that there's a supply constraint, they don't put as much effort into selling those specific products. Unconstrained, we might have sold significantly more workstations, above the number of orders we actually received. And this then has a cascading effect into other businesses. For example, every workstation that is not shipped, but that already has a disk in it, represents a disk that did not ship to somebody else. And every workstation that did not ship is a service revenue opportunity that did not get closed by MCS. This compounds itself through other systems in the company. The result gets to be significantly larger than you might first expect because of this cascading interrelationship throughout the system. This is just one example of this kind of mystery, if you will, that you have to unravel for each of the areas of impact so that you can understand the situation and what steps you have to take to avoid a similar situation in the future. Additional areas cause concerns as well. We experienced more order skew and pipeline problems on other products in addition to workstations. For example, more than 30% of the disks that shipped this quarter did not turn into revenue, but ended up in our pipeline. Price allowance levels at the end of the quarter were higher than anticipated, which has a direct dollar-for-dollar impact on profits. Every time you discount away a dollar, it is a dollar that comes directly out of profit. There was more pricing pressure than anticipated on digital consulting and MCS contracts, especially in the renewal and new business areas. Part of the pricing pressure comes from an accelerated shift of contracts to per-event consulting as customers become more comfortable with the reliability of our products. And we incorrectly predicted how much of that would occur. And in digital consulting specifically, there are a whole set of issues, each of them essentially insignificant by itself, but taken together, the result was a significant negative revenue impact for digital. Taken together, these and other issues resulted in a complete surprise to digital's management. And as a result, it was a surprise to Wall Street, and we were embarrassed with respect to our investors, and we've been paying the price in shaken customer confidence, shareholder confidence, and employee confidence, and a falling stock price. We also disappointed the bond rating agencies who've downgraded our debt based on this disappointing result. And we've taken the predictable battering from analysts and members of the press. In fact, one of us has a brand new and personal appreciation for what it feels like to undergo a public lynching, complete with pictures. Not a very flattering picture either, of most of these things I've seen. On a serious note, this is frustrating to all of us. Although I might be the one that's most visibly criticized, I recognize that each of you, too, has had to live with the consequences and tough questions from customers, your families, from neighbors about the results. And we must and we will do everything possible to make sure that we do not experience this again. We've all worked very hard, and we have a great deal to look back on with a sense of accomplishment. It's easy to forget that with all of the negatives swirling around us. Our successes in PCs and workstations and in servers, all of this is great. And by introducing leadership products and finally achieving a competitive position in Unix, we've gained the flexibility we need to meet customer requirements as we move forward. I continue to have great confidence in our people, our products, and our services. But unfortunately, this is not good enough. We need to focus on two things: revenue growth and achieving a competitive cost structure. I met with our global customer advisory board a few weeks ago. This is made up from chief information officers from about a dozen global customers. They had absolutely no concerns about our products. Not one issue about digital's products was raised. Their concerns were about account management, logistics, manufacturing, delivery, consistency, simplicity, business things, a whole set of unrelated things so far as quality or performance of our products is concerned. Basically, this means that we have the opportunity for revenue growth if we remove these barriers between us and selling our products and services to our customers. To use an engineering term, we have existence proof that we can do this. If you look at PCs, at workstation, storage, components and peripherals, we've been doing well. We also have a good foundation for solving some of the more pressing problems that are concerned customers because of the work that has already been done in this customer value chain. We're at the point of piloting several of the customer value chain initiatives, and we're looking at how best to accelerate their implementation and transfer this work into our operations as soon as possible. So I believe that we do have the opportunity to start seeing some significant revenue growth. That's good news. However, even with plans for significant revenue growth, we cannot afford to sustain the size of our employee population. We need to size ourselves to get to a competitive level. That does not mean figuring out how to chop 20% out of everything and then hoping that the systems will hold together with twine and baling wire. We must instead downsize our employee population in the context of the second major phase of our recovery plan, which is to focus our investments in the segments of the business where we know we can prosper and to divest elsewhere. We will ensure progress in that by giving business unit management even greater direct ownership and greater responsibility and accountability for their resources. My objective is to have each business unit own and control the essential resources necessary for its success, so that a real P&L by business unit exists and accountability is clear. This way of moving forward aligns very much with the slide that I showed you during the last employee forum DVM. The horizontal disaggregation of this marketplace is demanding a strong focus in those market segments in which a company chooses to do business. Since each of our businesses operates on a different model, in a different market segment. Each one has a different benchmark for competitive success. And if you add up the benchmark levels of employees for each of those competitors in related market segments, you cannot justify a company of 85,000 people with our level of revenue. You know, one commonly used productivity measurement in our industry and other industries, frankly, is revenue per employee. Although we've analyzed this and other data for many competitors, I thought I'd talk to you today about two that are most like us, fully integrated worldwide companies. This slide shows how we compare to IBM and Hewlett-Packard in revenue per employee. I'll call your attention back here to 1987. And you can see that we were at the same point as Hewlett-Packard. But you can see that at that time, Hewlett-Packard began working on growing their productivity. And as a matter of fact, this was accomplished by increasing the revenue primarily. I saw a quote from Lou Platt yesterday, who's the president of Hewlett-Packard. He said since 1989, they essentially had added no new people. You can also see that digital, during this period of time, did not do anything for 4 years at least to improve its productivity. Then you begin to see in 1990 a slight increase in the slope of this line. This was when we began to reorganize and downsize worldwide manufacturing. And finally, in 1992, you see the curve again begins to slope upward with a change in management. We started too late in getting serious about this. And you can see that the slope of that line implies that we're falling further behind. And we've reached a point of revenue per employee where these two competitors were 5 or 6 years ago. Look where they were 5 or 6 years ago. They were back here, which is where we are today. So we have a lot of work to do. By the way, these competitors are not among the leaders in this metric, but they're most like us in that they're fully integrated competitors. If you look at the implications of achieving a competitive position at our current revenue levels, the single metric of revenue per employee suggests a company of 65,000 people or fewer. Today, as you know, we have about 85,000 regular employees. We must achieve a competitive cost structure as rapidly as possible. And even if we are fortunate to achieve a reasonable growth in revenues, we cannot escape the fact that significant additional downsizing is unavoidable. Failure to act promptly will result in greater loss of employment. In fact, the entire enterprise could be at risk. You will continue to see greater autonomy among the business units as they compete vigorously in their respective markets. You will undoubtedly see a continuation toward a more directive, decisive, top-down management style, and less of a traditional digital matrixy style as we get the company in order. Why? Because we need to be more disciplined in making decisions, especially on how to eliminate work when we downsize. And we need to be disciplined in executing plans once we have made a decision. Before I take your questions, I want to read directly to you from a letter that I've just sent to our digital senior management, sent yesterday, I think. I won't read the whole thing, but a few paragraphs. Let me clear up any doubt that may exist. I intend for Digital's operations to be profitable by the end of this calendar year at the latest. Shareholders demand it, the board of directors expects it, and I expect us to deliver it. I do not underestimate the challenge that achieving profitability presents. But as a goal, it has this one advantage. It is very easy to understand, and it is not unrealistic. Other companies, when faced with this daunting a task, have frequently been plagued by substandard technology. Our technology is leadership. Other companies have sometimes been paralyzed by burdensome debt. This company has been more prudent. Our problems have to do with a cost structure that is too expensive, systems that are inadequate to the task at hand, sales and distribution channels that are not competitive, and investment models that are totally unaffordable. Now, it took many years for these problems to develop, but it's up to us to solve them, and quickly. This will mean sharply reducing our population and limiting or giving up participation in markets that are promising but not essential to our success. It will also mean a new sense of urgency, suspending endless debates, acting as a team instead of as individual players, and eliminating the confusion that frequently accompanies us in the marketplace. This again to my direct reports. Each of you has a substantial responsibility for timely implementation of decisions that affect digital's future. We must aggressively and immediately cut costs in every part of our business. Waiting will not make action any easier. Act now. I'm holding you accountable for pulling together and working with me to put this great company back on the right track. Our customers, our shareholders, our employees, and our partners are counting on us as never before. Now let me take your questions. Yes.
Good morning, Bob. Bob, I recently completed the second employee survey on VTX. Can you share with us any information from the first survey and specifically the questions and responses that were directed towards the senior leadership team?
Well, the importance of this survey, let me say again, is for the two-way communications to occur and to have a forum that we can understand how people are feeling about things and what is of most interest to our employees. I have not seen the results of the survey. I saw the result of a preliminary part of it, and there are many things in there that were not a surprise to me, but it was good to see the data. This is not going to be one of these things that we're spending some serious money here. This is not going to be one of these things that goes in some drawer somewhere, but it's intended to be utilized by me to understand not only what's on everybody's mind on a worldwide basis, but also, it's kind of interesting, morale in different parts of the company is quite different. You can go to some places and you might think that morale throughout the world or something is poor. It's not. I travel a lot, and within those groups that are succeeding, not surprisingly, morale is high and on an upswing. So it's an important measurement tool. My objective is to make sure that as we go forward, the senior leadership of the company, the people that report to me and report to them, get measured not only on the numbers, but also on the health and morale within their organizations. And to do that, I need some objective way to measure. And so that was the intent of this employee survey. It will be going on in the future. You know, annually, we want to at least get annually, maybe semi-annually, but with some affordable rate to understand, are we making progress in addressing employee concerns? As far as specific questions or concerns, since I haven't studied it, I can't respond to that at this time. But there will be a response. Other questions? Thank you.
Hello, Bob. My name's Jeannie Gray, and I'm a customer support consultant in the healthcare channel space. Mm-hmm. And I recently had a very disturbing question that I think that we need to prepare a package of standard responses for people who have direct customer contact. One of our customers, an end user of a reseller, was asked by a potential customer who was going to buy a 5-year warranty, mm-hmm. what would happen if Digital went bankrupt? I was in a rather unusual position because usually it's bankruptcy on the other end that we're discussing.
Mm-hmm. It's important to be armed with the facts, and that's a very good question. Digital is not going bankrupt. You know, if Digital did go bankrupt, what would happen to the speaker is quite clear. But we are not going bankrupt. In fact, the company is quite strong financially. You know, we have about $1.2 billion in cash, as I recall. We have long-term debt of $1 billion, and even if you count the preferred stock that we just marketed, that's about $400 million, a little less. So it's $1.4 billion in long-term debt and $1 billion cash on hand. You know, I wonder how many individuals have as much cash on hand as debt, but in any event, the company, in terms of the way that you measure companies, say debt to total capitalization, is at about 20%, which is quite conservative as industrial enterprises go. Now, we were a lot healthier. And certainly, if we don't start generating some profits here and focus on cash management, we could get into a cash bind. There's no question about that. So you have to pay attention to cash, because if you run out of cash, that's how you go bankrupt. But we do pay attention to it. We have an excellent treasury function. The company's financial condition at this moment is still strong. But that's why it's important to act with urgency. And that's also a major criteria as I look at different businesses that we're in and think about, are we going to stay in this business or not? One of the things I look at, is this a business that throws off cash, is kind of neutral to cash, or generates cash? It's quite clear to me that we cannot stay in all of the businesses that we're in today. So I want to say a little something, even though it's not directly what you asked. Although, so arm yourself to finish that question. Arm yourself with information that's available and digital today and other sources, you know, about the company's true financial condition. Our competitors will try to exploit this weakness. Now look at this $183 million loss that we had in the quarter, and they say, see, they're going out of business. Well, 2 years ago, in that same quarter, the loss was $100 million worse than that. We haven't gone out of business. We're not going to go out of business, but we do need to get profitable as soon as possible. We need to get profitable in Q4, if at all possible. I'm not making a forecast because, again, one of my colleagues liked to say, the revenue is a probability, cost is a certainty. We can work on the cost side to enable us to be profitable in Q4, and I need everybody's help in achieving that objective. It's terribly important for building confidence in our customer base. But the company is not at risk for the foreseeable future of going bankrupt. It's up to us to manage it so that we begin to rebuild the balance sheet.
I believe that we need a package of consistent responses for everyone that is in the field. I'm concerned, particularly in the reseller space, that this will impact fourth quarter sales.
Again, the competitors will try to exploit that. There is information available. I'm going to send a letter myself, certainly, maybe today, but certainly by Monday, to our customers. It'll be something that we compose to address that, and it'll be widely distributed. I've already done so to our shareholders, and as you can see, I just recently sent a little wake-up call to senior management in terms of urgency, but I will send something out to address that concern.
Thank you.
I started to go off on a tangent there, and I'm back to remembering what it was, Jeannie, and that was when we talk about the population side, we talk about what we're going to do there, we clearly have to get down to a level that is competitive. That doesn't necessarily mean that that many people, if you do the math, 25 or 30,000 people will be terminated. It means that there are some pieces of our business that I will try to separate from digital and sell or set up as some kind of standalone enterprise. And it's not to say there won't be some people that will be terminated, because look at the numbers. So it'll be a combination of attrition, you know, continuing to weed out weaker performers, elimination of redundant levels of management. We've been saying that for a long time. We've taken out a few, not near enough. It's amazing how resistant management layers are to change, not only in our company, but other companies. But now's the time. I need the support of our management team worldwide to address these issues. Yes?
Bob? Hi, I'm Claudia Mueller, and I work in the Worldwide Development and Learning Organization. I'd like to go to your point about the letter you wrote to your direct reports concerning accountability. What are you doing specifically to hold your managers accountable so we can get the company back on track?
Well, what it is that you talk about how you measure performance of your direct reports. There are several different elements to that. One is I have a clear commitment from each report as to what he or she is going to accomplish during the fiscal year. And you make some allowances, at least in my management style, for perturbations and changes that occur in the world once your plans are set, because it's never as you forecasted. But if you consistently miss the numbers, you have to find new employment. So you have to hold people accountable. Now that accountability has to go throughout the entire company, to everyone in this audience and everyone in my worldwide audience. Your objectives need to be clear enough that you can be measured. If they're not, your management owes it to you to make it clear. And you need to meet your commitments, because we can't afford it any other way. There was a time in digital when the margins were so high, in the halcyon days, 87, 88, products practically sold themselves, is the rumor. I suspect sales share that rumor. I think we worked very hard, you know, to sell our products. But it was a lot easier. I think everybody would admit that. Margins were a lot fatter. Accountability was so diffuse,
you really couldn't hold anybody accountable, because I know whenever I ask somebody, you know, who is responsible, they'd give you that salute, you know. It's somebody else. Not me. Not me. Those days are over. We can't afford that. So people have to be held accountable, responsible, but they have to have clear understanding of how they're going to be measured. And that comes back to, again, this business I talked about with the employee survey. Is you're not only measuring management on numbers, but also on leadership. What's the morale in that organization? How is it improving? How does it compare to other organizations? And it doesn't happen in 5 minutes. We're about changing a culture here. Many good things about digital's culture. I've been here 9 years now, almost long enough to say I'm a real employee. You know, been here 9 years. I am a real employee. I love this company. But some of the things that we've kind of grown accustomed to, we have to expunge from our society, get a little more focused and more accountable. And so we've been at it about 18 months. Not surprised to me that we haven't yet gotten there. But I'm quite tenacious, and we will get there. Yes. Oh, there's one here. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bob. Mary Welch from the Office of Ethics and Business Practices. Mm-hmm. Bob, how long do you think it will be before our salespeople have the information necessary to articulate our product strategy to our customers?
Well, I hope that the salespeople have some of that information today, but if you mean where it becomes clear enough that you can be more productive, I think that's an ongoing effort. I'm very optimistic, though, frankly, about the systems business unit with the new leadership of Enrico Pescatore. I've noticed, if you look at the PC catalog today, you can actually understand this thing. I'm told that you can order products from it and really understand what you're going to get, and it's clear. I'm hoping that we'll get the same kind of clarity. You know why I'm thinking about it? And you didn't ask this question yet, but I hope you weren't planning to, because then you'll be disappointed. But I'm going to answer it anyway. I have been repeatedly quoted out of context when I say that our sales force is the least productive in the world in the business, or something like that. It comes out that way. I did say that at Deacus last year, or something approximately like that. I said that we have, perhaps, the least productive sales force in the computer industry. And I said the reason is because management, that means me and sales management, business unit management, has not provided our sales force with clarity around the products and services, with a manageable set of products and configurations and tools, so that you know when stuff is going to be delivered and have some confidence that if you commit, it really will be delivered on that date. So that you have some way to configure a system and know that these components actually work together. And so you know what's optimum and what isn't for a customer's problem. This is a shared responsibility between, obviously, our worldwide sales professionals and management to fix this stuff. We've been working on it. It's getting a little better. It's clearly not good enough. It's not good enough because if you compare the sales per individual in our sales organization with that of our competitors, just for example, HP or IBM, we are substantially below what is necessary to be competitive. It's a shared responsibility. We have to work on it together.
Bob, I'd like to just ask a follow-up question, if I might. I think that many of us in the corporation believe that there's a further rationalization of our products that needs to go on in order to determine what a profitable cost structure can be for us to be successful. And I suspect, at least from where I sit, it's very difficult to be able to articulate what our product strategy is going to be to our customers and build the confidence of our customers that what their decisions are not going to subsequently be something we decide to divest from. So very specifically, if I might, how long do you think it will be until we have rationalized our products within an affordable cost structure?
I think that's a very good question. I think that we will have made the majority of the decisions around that subject by June of this year, which is a very short timetable, which tells you that there's a lot of work going on right now at headquarters and looking at these things. Not everyone will agree with the decisions. In fact, our habit of trying to get everyone to agree, of course, prevents decisions. The issue is to simplify the product line and the number of businesses that we're in so we can focus. There will be some product lines, I suspect. By the way, the fact that the decisions are made doesn't necessarily mean they'll be announced. I'll talk about that. Let's just say you are making a decision to divest yourself of one piece of your business, and the decision were made. In order to get a reasonable price and to find a reasonable home for that business and the employees that are part of it, you need to be able to negotiate with people that want to buy it or might want to buy it. That is not very well done in the public eye. You know, you have to, if you want to do the best job for your employees, your customers, you have to do that relatively quietly. That'll be an interesting challenge in this company. In any event, the decisions need to be made for the most part by June. They need to be made then. And changes need to happen. On the other hand, the strategy of the company to be a leader in open client server computing means that we will have, at least there's some things you're confident of. We have two platforms, an Intel architecture-based platform of PCs all the way up to servers, and an alpha-based similar systems, platforms. We have three operating systems on those platforms that you know. We have a multitude of tools that are necessary in order for applications to be integrated into those platforms. We will continue to be strong in networking, servers, workstations, these things you know. In the services area, you know that digital will continue to have a leadership, multi-vendor customer services capability. You know that in the consulting area, we've been working on it, but as you get further and further away from the core business, it becomes a little less certain. And so I understand what you're saying. And that's why it's urgent and important that we make these decisions in the near term. I don't know if that's an adequate answer, but since I don't know the result of the debates, I can't give you much more detail than that.
I think that you've certainly been very direct with us in a way that I'm certainly a lot clearer, and I hope others are too.
I hope my management team is clear, because that's the debate we have to have, and it's awkward. You know, unfortunately, many businesses that we're in today that we may not be in the future are good businesses. One of the criteria I said had to do with cash. The other criteria will have to do with focus. We are a defocused company. We are very defocused. And we have been for 18 months, even though, you know, I said in my first speech, I think, that one of our intents was to focus more on our customers and get more focused on our products and services. We have work to do there yet. We've got to get more focused. And we've tried to focus now on this concept of open client server computing, making good progress there. And we're going to stay focused on that. Other questions?
Yes, Bob. I changed my question while I was standing here.
I change the answer sometimes. That's okay. You know, you have to be flexible.
I'd like to talk about the subject of downsizing. Mm-hmm. I think some major damage has been done to the corporation on the past downsizing that's taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Not the fact that the downsizing took place, but how it took place. It seems to me that the downsizing took place simply by the numbers and not the ability to match the skills of the people to the job that needs to be done. And I'd like to have your comments on that.
Inevitably, that's the case in any downsizing. Unfortunately, in my career, I've worked in a number of companies where this was necessary. And I would say that it's been relatively well managed in this company in an objective point of view, given the numbers, just the sheer numbers that have been involved, and unfortunately, how many more we've got to do. By that, I mean, if I looked at it, I have the data, by the way, by layer in the company, so job grade level. The feeling, I'm sure, out there is that whatever job grade you're in, that must be the one that's under the most pressure. In point of fact, more vice presidents have been let go than any other category. Maybe we had too many, but in any event, that's been the category most heavily hit in terms of percentages. Throughout the layers, it's roughly the same. This doesn't get at your skills question. I understand the difference. But it says that's one thing. We do get the data. We look. And we look by a number of different sorts and categories that have to do with gender and race and various other things. The skill set one is harder, because what naturally happens as you try to identify those skills is that people actually what make up a company, and people have a tendency to protect their friends and want to keep their friends in the company, and sometimes that discrimination of skills needed gets lost. It's obviously the way to do it. One way I can do something about that, see, I see very few of these things, unfortunately, when you're in corporate. You can be sure that the downsizing is occurring in all geographies in which we do business. There's no way that you have line of sight visibility. But what I can do is to continue to hold management responsible and accountable for the results. And intelligent managers will realize that in order for them to succeed, they have to retain the necessary skills and the right mix of skills within their unit. And that's what we're trying to drive for. The other way you can work on that is with the human resource organization to ensure that the right questions get answered, you know, throughout all of this process. It's not easy, it's messy, and you inevitably make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that the USPSC managers recently had to reapply for their jobs. Why wouldn't that be a good idea, and it'll impact me, for all employees of Digital to do that?
In a sense, that is a way to do downsizing. When you talk about reapplying for your jobs, you have a couple of ways, there's many ways I suppose you can approach it. What would be going on right now in order to get at, for example, the system business unit structure that we need going forward? How would you suppose a person like Enrico Pescatore might approach that problem? Well, one way you might approach it is instead of saying the systems business unit is what's left over after we take out PCs and disks and semiconductors and whatever, and therefore you've got to work with that, one way you might do it is say, I'm just going to stand back a minute and kind of think, if I were building a systems business unit from scratch, what are the talents and skills that I need and can afford in a competitive business model in that business unit? And you look at the resources we have in Digital, you draw mostly from that pool. Usually you'd find there's some skill or capability you don't have. You might go outside our company and get that skill or capability. And you'd put together a business unit that had an affordable structure. When I say business unit, I don't mean just here in Maynard or in New Hampshire. I'm talking about as it extends throughout the world, that piece of engineering, manufacturing, logistics, sales, marketing, the extended business unit. And you'd figure out, what can you afford? What do you need? What are the skills? And there will be a lot left over. That is the right way to approach it. It's the right way relative to your question about skills. There's two issues there. That's how I would approach it if I were doing it. But then the other piece is, once you've decided and got that model and it's clear, how do you ensure that that is what gets executed? Because that's the other side of your question. See, a lot of times we give, it may surprise you, that occasionally we give the right direction from management headquarters. But how that gets interpreted and molded as it rolls out in the greater community that's Digital is a different matter. And we have got to, that's why I say in my letter that I read from, it's their responsibility, management throughout our company, to implement the decisions that are made. Not the decision they wish were made, or some variation that appeals to them, but what decision was made. And that's after, of course, suitable debate that we do have in order to make sure all points of view are heard. Then we have to move out with alacrity instead of the pace at which we've been doing it today.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Bob.
Yes.
My name's Larry Gagnon.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've spent a few moments here talking about some difficult times, some public financial problems. Mm-hmm. We've talked about basically some negative information. We're talking about downsizing. You're talking about focusing on revenue growth and achieving profitability. That adds a lot of stress to day-to-day work, dealing with your friends and family and so forth. So my question is, as president, and more importantly, as leaders of this company, mm-hmm. what do you recommend for employees to deal with stress in their day-to-day lives? And personally, how do you deal with it?
I have a lot of stress in this job, and the stress is internal stress. I had some questions I'll get to in a minute that were submitted written, and maybe I'll get to one of those, but one of them had to do with my fear or whatever of being replaced as the leader of the company. That's not something I lose a lot of sleep about relative to the board or external people. My stress is internal around doing the best possible job I can for the employees of this company. That's where my loyalties lie. That's how you feel. I realize that I have to do the best job possible for our customers because, after all of us are employed by customers. As I said in my last DVN, it's only the customer that can protect your job. We have to have a customer satisfied out there to pay our expenses. And so I'm certainly cognizant of our need to be responsive to customers. And shareholders, actually, I'm employed by the shareholders as represented by the board. And I do think about it. I take my board's inputs very seriously. But what I feel And what stress there is around representing you as the employees. That's a very emotional thing, and you feel that very deeply. And I worry about making the decisions that minimize the pain on getting to where we have to go. And as I've said many times, I try to focus on the objective here is to save as many jobs as possible, not to let people go, to save as many as possible. You know, 18 months ago, we thought and we tried very hard to save 85 or 90,000 jobs. I've said that on previous occasions. I remember it well. That was the objective. We tried to stay in most of the businesses we were in, get more focused, and we were doing reasonably well for a while. Unfortunately, competitive pressures, other internal errors on our part, you see those margins coming down. You know, at the same level of margin, we would have been quite profitable. We got our costs in line roughly if we hadn't had 10 points in product margin decline, but we did have. Or if we'd had the revenue growth for this year, our ratios would look a lot better. Our plan was to grow revenue this year. We didn't execute. That results in having to change gears. And so that puts a lot of stress on you. Now, each person must have some way of dealing with his or her stress. Me personally, you know, I do a lot of running. It's a thing I've been doing for 20 years now. I run on a very regular basis, and when I'm running, I think about, you know, the issues that I'm faced with, and I think about the importance of these problems and how I'm going to get through that. But my real concern is around the job function I have, the privilege of leading our employees, and to make sure that I do the best possible job that I can. For each employee, I'd suggest it's a similar thing. You need to be focused on how can you add the maximum value to the enterprise. You know, as you go through the downsizings that we have to do and the restructuring, inevitably, there will be some sort made of the skills and talents. And assuming that the skills and talents are needed, your best chance of staying with the enterprise is to be one of the top performers, whether you're in sales or engineering or wherever, to focus on doing your job well and working together, because I don't think there's a chance of this company succeeding like we want to succeed without teamwork. It's one of our core values. It's working together, not working your own personal initiative, but working with others so that digital can be more successful. You have a much higher probability of surviving that stress. Another thing is to recognize that you as an individual have value. You have a value also because you're an employee of this enterprise, but your real value is in who you are, what your character is, what skills you can bring to whatever enterprise. So I would recommend that you don't ever see yourself as only an employee of this company or some company. You have to see yourself as an individual that has value. Anyway, these are some of the things that I think about in times of stress. And certainly this is a stressful time and will continue to be till we get our cost structure in line, we get that revenue going again. I don't know if that adequately answers your question. It's a partial answer because it's a complicated subject.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
Thank you, Bob. Eric Hillman from Custom Systems. Mm-hmm. Fairly significant competitive threat is being mounted by IBM and others in the form of PowerPC Intelligent. Mm-hmm. As near as I can tell, this threat is a paper tiger at this mm-hmm. point. What are we doing strategically to counter this threat before it becomes much more significant?
In the case of PowerPC, there are a lot of opinions out there. My personal opinion is that it will be, of course, successful because of the Apple Macintosh conversion of that product line, an opportunity that digital, unfortunately, did not choose to elect. But from where we are today, I don't think it'll have a lot of success outside that capability. It's quite clear, I mean, if you just stand back and think about it, in terms of client-server computing, the client has largely been decided. You know, this is the Intel-based architecture, whether it comes from Intel or AMD or whomever. I mean, just think about it. That's what it is. And PCs of one kind or another outsell workstations by an order of magnitude. I mean, it's clear. In the workstation arena, RISC processors are clearly the winner, and it seems to me there performance counts. In terms of performance in workstations and servers, clearly Alpha is the architecture that no longer is any debate about. Really, who has the leading architecture and performance. We need more volume, and I have several initiatives underway to reduce the cost of our semiconductor capability to the corporation so we can stay on that leadership curve in terms of performance. This battle won't be settled for a while. It'll go on for several years between the different risk architectures. There's the MIPS architecture, the PowerPC that you mentioned, Alpha, PA Risk from Hewlett-Packard or whatever. But my belief is right now, it would seem logical that other than Intel architecture, the architecture likely to survive is that which has the most applications, which has the highest performance. We don't win yet in the application space. We do win in the highest performance space. We need to capture more applications, and we're working on that. It'll be a tough battle among all these different architectures. What's quite clear is that the marketplace will not support that many different architectures. You cannot afford to keep those architectures going. Another question.
Hi, I'm Sarah Epstein. I'm in Custom Systems. Mm-hmm. I'm a software engineering supervisor. Mm-hmm. I have a question about our information infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, when is digital going to have an integrated, automated business infrastructure to support our business? Why don't we do for ourselves what we do for our customers?
That is an extraordinarily difficult problem for this company, and it comes from the and a very urgent one. In fact, it's hard to think of anything that needs more attention, really, than that problem, because that problem results in our inability to get you timely information in the sales and marketing arena, you know, to be able to quote with confidence with customers, and also prevents, coupled with poor forecasting, manufacturing from having the right materials on hand to build the products as the orders come in and all kinds of things. And then finally, when we actually do satisfy the customer, we don't necessarily collect as quickly as we should because we don't have all of the invoicing systems that we'd like to have properly optimized. How do we get like that? Well, again, all of these problems like that have the same root cause. It was this idea that everybody everywhere was free to do their own thing. And it was a very interesting part of our culture. You find it over and over again. What you find in this case is in every territory practically, there are multiple systems, software systems, for getting this data and addressing logistics and these issues. I forgot how many there were, but it seemed like 1,600 different systems to try and run a business. Impossible. So we've been working on that in the value chain work that, as you know, and Bob McNulty, as Chief Information Officer, is responsible for the architectures and implementations of the physical infrastructure. But what's really broken are the business processes, and that's where the value chain work is important. And now we've got to get that work, a lot of it's been done, we've got to get that work into the line organizations and begin testing it and implementing it. The question as to when, clearly we need it. We needed it last quarter. Would have helped us a lot. Clearly, we need it immediately. My expectation is we're about a year away from having a substantially different system on a worldwide basis. We will have tests going on right now, rolling out in the UK, for example. There'll be some tests going on right now. Things will begin to improve spottily, but before it's worldwide, we're probably a year away. There was another, at the end of the last question, I never did say what we're going to do about combating that issue.
Please flip the cassette over, rewind to the beginning of side B.